First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yawning.
Hello and welcome to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. I'm Larry Rhodes, or DJ Doubter 5, and as usual, we have our co-host Wombat on the line with us. Hello, Wombat.
I am the Wombat.
The visuals are awesome. And we have Dread Pirate Higgs from Western Canada. Welcome. And John Richards from England, south of London. Welcome.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, Satanism, Pastafarianism.
Oh my God.
And the sciences. Conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. By the way, if you think you're the only non-believer in your town, well, you're just not. In Knoxville, here in the middle of the Bible Belt, we have a group of over 1,000 of us. So you probably have plenty of good company in your town. We're the Atheist Society of Knoxville, or ASK, and we'll tell you more about them and us after the mid-show break. So be sure to stick around. Wombat, what's our topic today?
Today, we are going to talk about charity. And I think it's an interesting topic because I just went through a charity experience extravaganza that I love to go into. But before we go into that main course for today's show, let's throw up to some pasta and noodles with our own weekly invocation brought to you by our own Dread Pirate Higgs.
All right. Our noodly lord, who art in a colander, al dente be thy noodles, thy blood be rum, thy sauce be yum, with meat as it is with vegetables. Give us this day our garlic bread, and forgive us our cussing, as we forgive those who cuss against us. And lead us not into ketoism, but deliver us some carbs. For thine are the meatballs, and the sauces, and the grog, whenever and ever.
Amen. All right, so here's the weird thing. I did go to a charity thing. It was a food drive. We prepared over 2,000 meals for a bunch of homeless people. I was bagging 480 bags of grocery foods, and we were giving them to these trucks. It was a whole event, but it was largely run by three main churches that are fairly large churches in our immediate area. But I had no problem going as an atheist to be able to volunteer and help out. I looked at their website, and they said, we're here to help hungry families and souls. And I was like, I'm here for the hungry families, but it's all good either way. It's all good either way. And I was thinking, there was a really interesting event that happened when we're done bagging up the groceries. We are ready to give them out to the homeless people who are waiting in line. And then the pastor is like, okay, everybody gather around. We're all going to listen to me now because we're going to do a prayer first. And I'm like, they're still hungry in line. Are we really going to do this? I didn't do it. I abstained. I walked on the outside. But he's doing his whole prayer of, I just want to thank everybody for being out here. Listen, there's a lot of different people out here. If you look around, there's a lot of different demographics. And I think that's so great that we all value community first. I just want to make that front and clear. Regardless of whoever you are or wherever you come from, we all came here together because we all have one fundamental understanding, and that is Jesus paid a price for our sins.
And he went off the rails.
Can I get an amen? And then I was like, amen. Yeah. And I was like, you were so close to something where I was like, oh, my head was turning around and being like, oh, maybe this is like actually pretty good. It was like, no, it was just that. And then it was the most rote. Go ahead, John Richards, go ahead.
Well, you said something right at the beginning of this little piece where I was puzzled because you said you were giving out food. I don't know whether it was a food bank or what, but we have them in this country now, thanks to the incompetence of our government. But you were giving out food to hungry people and souls. So can you tell me, what do souls eat?
True. We found there was a lot of food and there was a couple of succulents. There was a bunch of succulents. So maybe that was for the souls. They were giving out potted plants as well with the food. And it was good food too. It was like, you know, regular grocery food. We're backing it up and just like distributing it out to everybody. But the main thing for me on this weekend was charity. And I wanted to think about, you know, how do we contribute? Because obviously there's a marketing that's very strong with Christianity and charity, but they don't own the concept. And I wanted to have like a roundtable discussion on that. Before we do that though, maybe we'd be good to check in everybody else's weekends. Cause Dredd, you're looking outfitted for like a really awesome thing. What's going on with you?
Well, I'm about 1,500 kilometers north of my residence in Fort St. John, which is oil country. So
okay.
I'm working in the oil and gas industry right now as an industrial medic. So
awesome. Very cool.
Yeah. So I go out with crews to, you know, right now we're doing, they're shutting off wellheads and capping them off. So we've been going, I'm shadowing another fella right now.
Weird question. Was there a gas mask mandate for that role?
No, not in this particular case, but one of the big things that we have to watch out for is hydrogen sulfide. So we do, you know, we wear gas alarms and you know, SCBA and all that kind of stuff has to be available for, you know, to provide that air in the event that there's some kind of a leak. But generally, you know, it's not like the old days where, you know, it was a bunch of roughnecks on a rig.
With it's a bird on the inside.
You know, it's safety first. And the guys always say there's nothing so important that right. You can't stop for a minute and think about what you're doing. So that's absolutely what we're there to support. So.
For our radio listeners, I just want to say that this is, I think, the first show that Dredd's ever done on this with a clean shaven face. So it was a magnificent beard. Moment of silence for Dredd's beard.
Yes,
indeed.
Remembrance of the beard. Yes.
Remembrance of the beard. There's going to be a little PowerPoint presentation in memory of, and then go right back to it.
My rotations are actually quite long. They may be 1 to 2 months at a time. It may be I'm not here as often as I would certainly like to be, but you know, it is what it is.
You'll be missing.
I'll be here as often as I possibly can, and I'll always have my prayers in my thoughts for you.
Thank you. And listen, if the pastor started out his food bank prayer with an invocation to the past flying spaghetti monster, not only would that be apropos, but it would actually incorporate everybody in on the festival rather than immediately singling out everybody who didn't follow his particular.
I can't think of why anybody would not like pasta. So
exactly. Yes. And never listen, if you are a Christian and you're watching this and you have a potluck and everyone else brings food to your place and you want to stop everyone from eating so you can pray to your God, don't do that. If you're in a food bank and you want to stop a line of people who are hungry to get the food that the other people help to prepare food for you, don't do that. Just let them get the food. And when everyone's gone, have all the prayers you want afterwards. After you feed people, then you pray, not beforehand. Don't hold us hostage to this conversation that you're having. It's such a terrible practice. John Richards, what do you think? And how's your weekend?
Well, I wanted to ask Dredd whether he's got any souls to medic where he is now.
No souls.
No roughnecks and no souls.
Yeah.
Out of five.
Well, one of the things that I hate is not so much at charities, but just at funerals. I mean, I've had two brothers. I've gone to both parents and two brothers' funerals and other people, of course, in-laws and stuff. But the preacher will take like 10 or 15 minutes to talk about the person who is deceased. And then he'll go on with his sermon, which will last anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour. They take advantage of the people who are there to sell their message. And that really makes me angry.
That's insane. I've never really been to a funeral. I've maybe been one when I was wet Christian and it was our pastor's funeral, but I wasn't really paying attention because I was like 8 years old at the time. Yeah. But I did not know that funerals were, what's the right word?
Preaching events.
Preaching events. Yeah. I thought it was more just the respect of the person who actually died. Now I have to think about like how my funeral is going to look.
Right. Well, I recently went to Joe Barnhart's funeral. It was at a UU church, which is not nearly as religious as most churches out there. Matter of fact, it's got a secular arm or part of it. And they spent the entire time various people coming up and talking about the relationship with the deceased and what a great person he was and the experiences they had with him. It was more like a wake than a traditional funeral. And I really like that. I mean, I think it's a good idea.
John and Dredd, I don't know if you know about the United Universalists, but it's like an offshoot of the Methodists and then are solely focused on inclusivity. And so a lot of their sermons are like Carl Sagan presentations, PowerPoint presentations, like that. Yeah, or and if they do a Christian event, there's a Hindu event immediately afterwards. There's a secular event immediately afterwards. They make sure to make a point that everybody is represented in how they present. However, it's still very, very, very church-like in both like the songs and stand up, sit down and the tithing. Right. So it's not like Sunday Assembly where it's a bit more free for all based on wherever you go and it's only once a month. It's still very much a weekly thing. There's still very much like a leader pastor type figure, but it's the best version of a church that I think people could go to. Yeah. And if you are Christian, I would recommend visiting one in your local area if you can get to it. John Richard. Okay, so caught up with you. Doubter Five, how you been since last week?
Oh, I've been fine. Just keeping on keeping on. Working and playing computer games, waiting for spring.
Yeah, the struggle. Just working and playing video games and riding your motorcycle. It's a drag. We got Dredd in fire gear being on oil rigs, and he's just like, yeah, I also have a hard time. Sometimes I'm playing Star Citizen, my download rate drops below 200 megabytes per millisecond.
The struggle is real this weekend because they dropped a major update, wiped all your progress, got rid of any ships that you didn't pay actual money for.
Wow. And
it is so buggy. It's unplayable. I mean, at the current time, I can't even get in the game. Well, the struggle is real. I'm not putting out forest fires, but I am.
We're all out here.
I'm sorry, Larry. That wasn't a real struggle. That was a virtual struggle.
That's true. Very true. But the reality is still a struggle.
Okay.
I would like to say something about charities, though. Whenever I'm talking to believers in the field, and I do some tables where I talk about atheism and religion, and people always say, yeah, but you guys don't do any charities. I mean, it's all the charities out there are religious, and no, they're not.
Right.
I'd like to mention some of the non-religious charities that are out there. Amnesty International is a secular charity. Friends of the Earth, Doctors Without Borders, UNICEF, even Red Cross is not that kind of cross. It's a secular charity. So any charity.
Peace Corps as well also throws right into that.
Right. Any charity that is not explicitly religious is a secular charity, or what you might call it an atheist charity, because they're not religious based.
Right.
Yeah. Because over here, of course, we don't have that many religious charities. I subscribe to two charities, and I have done so every month for I don't know how long, 20 years probably. One is a cancer charity named after, what's her name? The female who, I can't remember. But the other one is the United Nations Kids Charity, So, and neither of them. In fact, in this country, if you nail your charity to a faith, you won't earn so much. Mm. And coming up this very week, we have something called Red Nose Day. Is it Red Nose Day this week?
Uh-huh.
Or it's a television, a telethon, and all the comedians and singers get together and they put on a show that goes for about 4 hours, and they keep putting up pleas and saying, look, this is for those starving children in that part of the world, and so on and so forth. And they raise 20 millions, 30 millions in a night, and they don't mention God.
Good.
Because if they did, everybody would switch off, or pretty much everybody would switch off.
Nice. I'm glad that there's that culture. Like, that's the stuff that needs to permeate through the rest of the world. I'd say this too. While there are definitely non-religious charities, I think one of the scary things is those charities or the people who participate in those charities wouldn't have any issues to support a Christian-based charity if they needed volunteers or if they needed help. So like me as an atheist, I have no problem going to an event to feed the homeless, even if the event's run by a church, because I want to feed the homeless. But I wonder how many Christians would be willing to do the other way around and go out of their way to leave their denomination to support an atheist charity event. And I'm not saying they won't, but I'm just saying it's clear that when you are a Christian organization for a church and you're helping people at your church and you're only letting people through your church newsways get out to people who are maybe helping other people who are other parts of church networks nearby, you're only helping yourself at that point. And is that truly a charity anymore? Right. Is it charitable if you're just helping yourself?
Well, there are liberal churches. I'll give them credit. They have preachers and pastors. They wouldn't mind visiting a charitable event run by an atheist. Matter of fact,
Satanists
for sure, especially. But we've had some preachers that have actually come to our meetups and enjoyed the conversation and camaraderie. You know, they're not atheists, but all are welcome as long as you're there for the discussion and friendly.
And so, not to preach,
I have to stick up for a few
punch.
Of them.
Huh? Okay, go for it.
Yeah, well, who, me?
Yeah.
the reason that you have a different culture in the U.S., it's because after World War II, you didn't do what we did, which was we set up a welfare state in 1945. And that's the whole state being charitable. We are looking after our poor, our jobless, our sick, starving, our homeless. We're not doing it as well as I'd like at the moment because we've had 13 years of right-wing rule, and they are mean buggers. So at the moment, they're letting the churches sneak in.
Yeah.
And that's a terrible mistake, because it's the responsibility of the entire population to look after the feeble, vulnerable ones.
Yes.
It still is, but only the churches are taking credit.
And the thing about it is the right wing, same as here in America, are generally made up of evangelicals and Christians. Why are the Christians standing in the way of such a charitable enterprise of trying to take care of the lowest people, the people who cannot take care of themselves?
Yeah.
That's to me, the oxymoron of all of Christianity.
Yes.
They you know, me, mine first. And
right.
I got mine. Screw you.
It's tribalism at its best. Also, it's a good power play too, right? To say, hey, we are the good guys. That's the branding of Christianity. Don't worry about the
virtue signaling.
Thing.
Yeah.
Virtue signal. We are good. You're pure. You're charitable. We have a good positive impact on society. Don't worry about all this underlayer of terrible misogyny, bigotry, and what is it? What's the totem? Man, I'm gonna. What's it called when one bird pecking? What's it called when one bird, the bigger bird,
pecking
pecks
order?
Pecking order. Is this like, this is your father now? That's mother. Blah blah blah. And these are your brothers and sisters. And I decide your family. And I decide how to what you believe in, what your values are, and how you raise your children, and what they're gonna, how they're doing their next science test. Dread, what's up?
Well, you know, it's typical of the sort of tautologies that religions establish in order to justify themselves. They define good by the things that they do, and that by virtue of the things that they do, they are good. So if you're not fitting into that definition, then that in itself is how they establish the sort of in-group and out-group.
Right.
Of course, that ignores the fact that they're overlooking the things that they don't do.
Right.
Yeah.
And you didn't, when you were going around at the beginning, Ty, you didn't ask me how my week was.
I thought I did. I thought I heard something from you, and then I went on to John. Okay, John Richards, how is your
week? We always just assume your week is great.
Yeah.
We can tell us like that.
John Richards, I feel remiss if I don't ask you how your week is.
Well, I wanted to tell you that last night, Tercia and I had a chat with an ex Amish woman.
Oh, that's good.
Wow.
The Amish misfit. Unfortunately, Tercia plugged her microphone into the wrong port, and it ruined the balance of her voice. Well, equi something of her voice.
If you ever needed a good lip reader, let me know. I can help you out.
Yeah, that's a good idea, actually. Yeah. So anyway, this woman, the misfit Amish woman, explained what you have just been describing, how you have to be respected in your tribe in order to qualify for privileges such as, you know, healthcare and so on. And that's not the way it should be. It should be the other way around. But in the Amish religion, they don't go out for medical help unless you're somebody who is risen up the status level in that locality and they think you're worth releasing to the proper doctors. It's absolutely criminal.
It's terrible. That's why I don't support Amish societies. And when they have soap or apple pies or whatever, it's like, people are like, yeah, but they're really good apple pies. I'm like, you can get them at Walmart. Calm down, calm down. Like this is one, a cult, two, a very terrible organization that's nothing but the worst place to be if you're a woman. I would say in America. Sure. Like, I can't imagine a worse place to be a woman in America than in an Amish society. Like that is, you can scream and nobody hears you. sort of situation. Yeah. I'm glad she got out. That's not an easy accomplishment.
No, not at all.
And we need to have
one of the things that religions use mostly to keep their followers in line is a bubble, information bubble.
Yep.
And without any technology, the bubble is almost 100% complete in an Amish community.
Yep.
They have no way, you know, of finding out any kind of truth outside of the village. Go ahead.
Just to add to that, but there are people who are outside of the Amish communities who are also in a bubble. And you think to yourself, what's your excuse? You have the internet. You have all these other things. It's because from a formative age, while they're still understanding how basic physics work, like if I drop something, it's going to fall off the table. They were being fed this indoctrination of Jesus Christ and the story of the Bible. And here's your authority figures that you always follow. And they'll accept the truths of the world along with the lies of their dogma hand in hand with each other until they become part of the same thing, to the point where they're an adult and they can't parse their reality from their religion. They feel like one and two the same. That's a really dangerous situation that anyone can fall into. And I think Dredd, you hit the nail on the head by saying Christianity basically offers a simplified version of morality where it says, hey, you're virtuous by the actions that you do. And that feels like it makes sense. It feels intuitive that if I do good things, I'm a good person, and all I have to do is just keep doing good things. But the idea of a morality system is not based on what you do. It's in fact the criteria that chooses what you do and what you don't do. Right.
Yeah,
that is ethics in a nutshell. And when you sell people, oh, it's only based on what you do. It's like, great. Well, I can buy you a chocolate cake. That's a good thing. Well, if I know you're allergic to chocolate, that's a bad thing. And if I keep doing it, that's an even worse thing. If I keep trying to sell you something that I know is going to hurt you, that's a bad thing. Even if the action seems like it's good, there's a context for all of my actions. And so it's more of the criteria of my actions and not the actions themselves that determine whether or not I'm doing a good thing. Well, but that is a nuanced concept. What do you think, Dredd?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm just finishing up on Kant and the critique of practical reason or pure reason, sorry. And, you know, so he's talking about, morality as, or happiness as the motivation for virtue and morality. And of course, he couldn't square that against this idea that morality is transcendent, right? That it is, in fact, something beyond ourselves that we aspire to, because he believed in God, right?
Sure,
so
sure,
he
sure.
was trying to justify the sense that morality is, I guess, absolute. And if it's absolute, then happiness can't be a motivation towards it, because that would contradict it, of course, right?
Right.
So, again, it's just, religion, when religion gets into morality, it really screws it up.
It messes it up. And Dredd, I wanted to make a clarification from 2 weeks ago. I said that negative responsibility was a Kant mention. Kant did have a position on it, but I had it completely flipped around. It was the David Hume position. So thank you for correcting that. John Richards, what's up?
But you guys have just reminded me, talking about morality, of something else that happened to me this week, which is an old sparring partner of mine, somebody, a Christian, who I first met almost 10 years ago on a radio show where we were pitted against each other in the debate. It was a premier Christian radio show hosted by Justin Brearley. He's a great guy. But we've kept in touch, that old sparring partner and I, over the years. And he has gone on, he's finished his master's, he's got himself a PhD, and he's now he calls himself an assistant professor. I would say he's a lecturer grade one, but that's the designation that he has at this new university, which is a Christian university just set up outside Boston. Anyway, he is now teaching Christianity to students, one of whom he referred to me. He said, this student, I don't want him to be raised in an echo chamber, so I want him to experience an alternative worldview. Will you talk to him? And I did. And we had this fantastic conversation, which I was able to, with his permission, I recorded, because he was there. He was trying to take notes. And I said, well, if I record this, I'll send you the file and you can view it anytime you like and take the notes as slowly as you wish. And subsequently, I asked him if I could use it for my channel. And he said no. And of course, I'm sensitive to that, because in his community, coming out as somebody questioning like he was, could really upset some apple carts. It's possible that he will become shunned. His marriage might break up. He could lose his children. So, of course, I don't want to do that to him. So what I've done is I've invited Dredd. Where is he? Which side are you, Dredd?
It's all right. Okay. It's different for everybody.
Okay. Well, anyway, Dredd, as an actor, has kindly agreed to play him. Nice. So that we can have, he will be completely anonymized. No name, no face, no voice, no background. And thanks to Dredd, we can use this material, and it's fantastic.
Sounds great. Okay. Guys, we got to get ready for a break, though. I did want to make a point before we head out. It's the idea that Christian charities and secular charities, we're all helping the same person. So like, the more we pit ourselves against each other, the more we all lose, because we're not helping the people that should be our own safety blanket and the people in our community. If we can help everybody, the rising tide lifts all boats, basically. So like, we got to be willing to be charitable without the labels, in my opinion. And what better label to get rid of, or to not focus so much on, is I want to help you for my God. So everybody stop being charitable and let me pray for a bit. It's like, no, let's just be charitable. Let's be charitable. Let's make charities charitable, period. Larry, feel free to take us out. We'll come right back in. I want to get into information bubbles when we get back, though.
This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We'll be right back after this short break.
Have you ever noticed how God keeps moving? In ancient times, believers in the biblical God thought that he lived on a mountaintop. But once we were able to scale that mountain and observe for ourselves that he wasn't there, he moved into the clouds. But once we were able to fly, well, let's just say it got a little bit more complicated pinning down his residence. Because it seemed that he had many homes. Some believers would assert that he lives in the human heart. But see, the heart has been mapped, opened up, and thoroughly observed. Guess what? He wasn't there. And then it got really silly, because the believers in the biblical God began to assert that he is everywhere, at once. But that didn't make much sense upon further scrutiny, mainly because they also insist that evil cannot exist in his presence. Yet, they admit to believing that evil exists in the world. If God exists everywhere, then evil shouldn't exist anywhere. Going by their own definition. See, if being omnipresent is one of the main ingredients in your definition of God, then you are presented with somewhat of a dilemma. So where does God exist now? Now it seems that the apologists have used their GPS, their God positioning system, to pinpoint his new locale at the beginning of the Big Bang. Now, according to them, this is where he is. But isn't it more likely that you're just moving the goalpost? At this point, you have very nearly moved him out of our reality. Now to me, that means that one more step, and you've almost got it. Because outside of our reality would mean that he's not real.
Hello, and welcome back to the second half of the Digital Freethought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Let's take just a moment to talk about the Atheist Society of Knoxville. ASK was founded in 2002. We're in our 21st year and have over 1,000 members. We have weekly in-person meetings every Tuesday evening in Knoxville's Old City at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria. Look for us inside at the high top tables, or if it's pretty weather outside on the deck. We also have a Tuesday evening Zoom Ask meeting. And if you'd like to join us, email us for details at askanatheist@knoxvilleatheist.org or letschatse@gmail.com. You'll find us online at Facebook, meetup.com, or knoxvilleatheist.org. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to a meetup and do a search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one? Start one. All right. Wombat, where do you want to pick up?
I want to talk about information bubbles real quick before we head out on this show. I had an interesting conversation when I was out to play disc golf earlier this week or earlier last week. And I have a friend named Joel. Joel's very Christian. It's just what it is. You meet a lot of him when you meet people in Tennessee. But he's very evangelical with his approach, because no matter what conversation you start with, he will always turn it into a conversation about why God is amazing and cool and the best God. Mm-hmm. And so I was telling him, hey, I'm learning sign language. I'm actually like invested in these live classes on the weekend where I go out with a couple of deaf people and we go and eat some food and we can only sign. There's no talking. And it's really good way to just work on conversation. And he's like, I have a favorite language and it's ancient Hebrew. And I'm learning ancient Hebrew because it really makes me realize that the Bible is translated perfectly from ancient Hebrew to English. And if you look at every letter in ancient Hebrew language, you can see that each one means something related to God. It looks like a bull's head. And if you look at a bull's head, you realize that means father. And what is ancient Hebrew? It means Abba, and Abba's father. And he's just going off and on and on. I'm like, you know, if we're talking about like languages that we're learning, I'm glad you're learning a language, that's cool, let's talk maybe some other languages. Like, no, I really want to focus on this ancient Hebrew, why it's so good with God. And I'm like, is there any reason why, as like, is ancient Hebrew your favorite language? And he says, yes, it's absolutely. And I said, isn't it weird that like it's, if it wasn't so tied to Christianity, maybe it wouldn't be your favorite language? Because I know for a fact this guy doesn't speak ancient Hebrew. He's as white as the sun is bright. Like, I don't mean that in a bad way, but like, it just is what it is. And he said, well, Tyrone, isn't that a little biased for you to say? Or actually, there's no bias for you to say that, because as you can see, I'm talking about a language that has transcended what human knowledge was able to know about during that period of time. And before he could start his preaching, I just wanted to remind him, one, Joel, you have a Christian name. You have Christian parents who named you a Christian name. You are a guy in the South in America, which is predominantly Christian, particularly in this area. If we're talking about bias, you have to at least be aware that you have some. You have to at least be aware of that. And he said, no, there's no way I'm biased. That's not what I'm talking about at all. I was like, listen, there's nothing wrong with bias. This is the last part of the story. I'm sorry. There's nothing wrong with bias. Like, my clock is biased to telling me the right time. You can be biased and still be right, but at least you should recognize what the bias is. Like, you should at least recognize, you have a tool to at least know what, if you're being biased or not being biased. He's like, I'm not biased. And that was the end of the conversation. We just went back to playing disc golf. But yeah, it still bothers me in my head. That anyway, John Richards, do you have comments on stories like that? Because people are in information bubbles, and I'm worried for them.
I want to take your Joel story. I assume it's not Joel Osteen, your friend.
No, of course not. He didn't fly us in his private jet to the disc golf course. Okay.
But because we have that daily here, we have a little slot on Radio 4, which is called Thought for the Day. And it's always how a priest can take an item of news and begin, and you're sort of interested because it's just happened, and then he can gradually morph it into Jesus in the case, of course, 5 minutes. So, but the other thing I wanted you to tell to Joel is ancient Hebrew is a Jewish language, not a Christian.
and in fact, it's called Aramaic. It's not ancient Jewish.
Yeah, they didn't call it ancient Hebrew. It's Aramaic.
And of course, Greek was also a prominent language that many of the texts were written in. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's funny that atheists know that, but they don't.
It's true. Mm-hmm. I did bring up like, hey, I love Greek numerals if we're talking about old languages. And he was like, I don't know anything about that, but I do know ancient Hebrew. And I was just like, you know, the numerals, like, no, I don't know anything. Let's go back to ancient Hebrews. There's a point I want to make. I'm just like, okay, this is a weird conversation, but it is typical. It is the typical Joel conversation. Yeah,
if Christianity had a language, it would be Roman, you would think, or Latin.
Yeah.
You know, this is where it was created.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. The thing is, I also brought that up too. I was like, how the Roman numerals make sense, where you have 1 for 1, 2 for 2, 3 for 3. That's very clear. Like, you can look at that and easily understand it. Chinese has the same thing too, where it's 1 stroke for 1, 2 for 2, 3 for 3. Like, aren't those better structured languages in the terms of, if we're to build a criteria based on what's the best language, based on just ease of understanding and like simplicity, doesn't that like get on your criteria? It's like, that criteria doesn't count because it doesn't have anything to do with my God belief. And I, in my mind, it was just such a biased statement to make. And I told him about the bias, and he's like, well, you see, Ty, I'm a presuppositionalist. I was like, how does that make your argument any stronger if you're just assuming you're right from the beginning? Like, don't you know that that's the red flag?
We use that against you.
Yeah, can you imagine any physicist or scientist saying I'm a presuppositionalist? You know, I'm right, you're wrong, there's no way you can change my mind.
Can I just point out that the Arabic numbers are also the same in that they're easy to count, because a 1 is 1 stroke, a 2 is 2 strokes, a 3 is 3 strokes.
Exactly. And we just Anglicanized them over a period of time, if you can believe it. Mm. I love it. So in my mind, So the idea is he wears his information bubble, his complete bubble, like a feather in his hat, like a belt, like it's a thing that he's proud of, because he lives in a culture, a miniature culture that endorses that. Mm. And that's the scary thing. Like, we can point out bias, we can point out information bubbles, but there are some people who see that as a good thing. And I feel like that tail wagging the dog sort of like backwards understanding of the universe makes it very, very difficult to get through to certain people.
Or they see it as a no thing. It's like believing that everybody else has an accent except you.
Oh, that's interesting. Could you elaborate on that?
Well,
if everybody's different except for me, then I'm okay. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying that everybody has an accent.
Right.
You would say that I speak with an English accent.
Correct.
But from where I'm coming from, I speak without an accent, and you guys have all got accents.
You speak with an American accent. Yes.
Right. Very true. Yeah. I mean, if anything, it just the salve of Christianity is to like reduce uncertainty in your life. You know, you'll know what happens after you die. You have understanding what good and not good or evil is. You know how to judge people accurately because your best friend's the creator of the entire universe. And the things that you love are the things that that being loves. And the things that you hate are the things that that being hates. And it gives you a lot of comfort. But it also, in my mind, improperly sets you up for interacting with people who have any sort of different cultural aspects or any sort of different philosophy, to the point where you can't even talk on the same level. And when it's as clear as maybe you don't know this thing as well as you think you do, it just starts to cause the brains to start smoking and being like, well, there's just something wrong. Something's wrong, but it can't be me. It has to be you. It has to always be you. And I can see that going off in Joel's mind sometimes, but I don't like pushing at it because I'm not in the career of making people feel uncomfortable or upset anymore or anything like that. But I appreciate his friendship, but I also worry for him as just like another person being charitable in the mindset of other people, that there are a lot of people in his same condition that don't have access to information or have access to information, but are unwilling to educate themselves on these certain aspects. But yet they have a power to keep me from being able to freely express myself or control what school systems learn or what politicians get into office. And I just feel like that imbalance is very concerning for me. Larry, I'd like to get your feedback on something. Do you, your pastor friend who you brought over to the Barley's Tap Rooms and Pizzerias when you've had conversations with him, feel like it was genuinely concern or interest in any of the points that you were making? And do you feel like, one, that's something that more people should be doing, or do you?
No, I think she was a very open-minded person. I think she took our points very well. She still relied on faith to keep her her beliefs where they were, but she used those in a very liberal manner. She runs a kind of a liberal church on I think it's Broadway.
Okay,
but I respect her highly, and she's never abusive. She never condescending, a very nice person, very happy to know her. And I wish her well. I hope that she learns more about the religion, and I'm sure she will, and eventually makes her way to atheism, but I'm not holding my breath. She's a very nice person.
And I have another friend who I was playing disc golf with, along with Joel, named Aaron, who's also Christian. This guy is homeschooled, lives out in the middle of the country, whole family is Christian. They have a church set up in their home, yet knows I'm an atheist, knows I'm asexual, totally cool with me, never forces a religion on me, is willing to like laugh about a lot of the stuff that I bring up with, supports the fact that I'm on this radio call. I've nearly babysitted his kid. I've been over to his farm. We've like fixed and docked and lambed sheep together. Like we have a really good bond. And so I'm not saying that if you're a Christian, you're entirely incapable of interacting with atheists, but I do feel like there's no excuse if you can't, because there's definitely people who can. So it's more of like a personable issue that I probably have an issue with more than the dogmatic point of view. Dread Pirate, when you have people over at your Possifarians, are they always Possifarians, or is there any curious Christians that come over too that are just interested in seeing what you're up to?
We call the pastor curious. So absolutely. People come to see what it's all about, and there's never any pressure. If we're having a meal, I'll give the benediction, but we do it, we repeat, short lines of it after, so the crew would repeat it after me. Nice. But it's a matter of choice whether or not you want to or not. And some people participate just because, it's something so different that they want to just to say that they did. You know what I mean? So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. I get you. John Richards, what can we do as Americans to get outside of our information bubble?
Travel.
I like it.
Easy as that. This person, this misfit Amish we were speaking to last night, joined the military. I think she was in the Navy, and she went to see the world. And of course, in fact, that's the last. What happened to the last two of our guests on Free Thought Hour? They were both in the military. And when you do that, you get to see that other countries have other gods. There isn't just mine, and that's correct. It's the only true one. Right. There's more people in the world who believe in other gods than the people who believe in yours. And that's a wonderful mind-opening experience.
It is.
The worst thing I could tell you about when I was in, I visited Chicago about, 15 years ago? No, more, about 20 years ago. And during that visit, we went to see somebody who lived in a little town to the south of Chicago. And we said we were on the way to St. Louis, I think it was. And she said, I've never been there. You know, she'd just potted around in her little village. And that was it. No experience, very parochial, very narrow-minded, no encountering other people. And that's what gives you this tendency to think you're right and the rest are wrong, and it's otherness, it's tribalism, it's horrible.
Yeah. Ben? I was going to say that, you know, with respect to Pacifarian, I told you I'm shadowing a fella who hasn't been really forthcoming about being a Christian, but just the conversation leads me to to believe that he is. So yesterday I introduced him to the whole idea of Pastafarianism as, sort of one of those outsider tests of faith, you know, like if you can look at my belief system and say, well, that's absolutely absurd. There's no way you can possibly believe in that.
Right.
I simply turn it around and say, well, you know, consider the other belief systems out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, think about Muhammad going to heaven on a winged horse. Right. How many of those have you seen? How many talking snakes have you seen? How many virgin births have you seen?
Jesus just flew up to heaven. I mean, bodily, like Superman.
Well, he's still on the way to heaven right now. He's got maybe
apparently.
It's the skyhook. He was lifted by the skyhook, right?
Or by his own bootstraps.
I did want to bring out the outsider test of faith, very good mechanism to understand what your criteria is to disregard certain religions. But it's a lost opportunity if you don't understand what that criteria is and apply it to every other religion that's out there, or even the ones that you currently believe in. So it's not just, oh, they believe in pasta, that's silly. So it's like, oh, so you're saying it's weird to believe in inanimate objects, or no, just like talking things that don't normally talk, that don't exist in nature. That's silly.
Like I don't believe in donkeys. That.
It's like, okay. So like if that's the criteria, let's look at Christianity. It's like, are we using the same rule or are you using a double standard?
That's it, right? It's a chance to see where your standard for your own beliefs sits in relation to the standard you apply to others, right?
Yeah.
And if they're uneven, well, then right there, you've clearly demonstrated to yourself.
They need to learn about the outsider test for faith.
Yeah.
Right. And the sad thing is I work with a bunch of scientists. Some of them are religious as well. And while they're well-meaning, they are more than open to tell you that they operate on a double standard. I'll say like, hey, it sounds like you're operating on a double standard. They're like, of course, because there's a standard for science and then there's a standard for the spirit. And spiritualism is a blah, blah, blah. I'm like, why are you operating on a double standard? And I'll say double standard over and over again. They'll be like, no. It's two different standards, Ty. It's
not
they're pushing Stephen Jay Gould's non-overlapping magisteria.
Yeah. Can I have a pound of that spirit they're talking about, please?
Right. You know, I can't. It hurts me because I guess I take this a little personally because I was in that same position maybe about 14 years back. Like Larry, before I went over to Knoxville and we met each other, I would say like 5 years before that, I was a Christian going through my transition to like realize, oh, maybe I'm not as Christian. Maybe I'm just not religious. I'm not an atheist. I'm not the A word, but I'm just, okay, I understand what atheists are. Dang it. Am I one too? Dang it. I am. No. Okay. Well, let me figure this out. What's the wrong? Do I like eating babies? Is baby blood? Oh, I guess it's not that bad. Actually, this is a really good. I need to tell everybody I'm an atheist. Why aren't you an atheist too? This. Okay, I'm calming down. I'm learning how to talk to people. Everything's good. And then I met Larry's group and I went through that whole thing. And now it's just this pleasant, like atheist guy that like everyone liked talking to. Cause I went through that. I went through it.
Yeah.
But I feel like everyone, I don't feel like everyone went through it, because John Richards, you never had to go through that. But there's a lot of anger that comes as you buck off
you have dogmatic grievance.
Thing that everyone believes in.
Yeah. Well, you've been lied to all your life. That's
exactly.
That's,
like for 20 years of lies, you're like, what? You've been telling me the real world every day, like you're not ready for the real world. And then you tell me you're not ready for the real world. You can't do this in the real world. And now I'm in the real world and tell me half these people believe in imaginary friends still. Like, that's so upsetting.
Anyway, sorry. Yeah. So can you tell me, how many babies did you have to eat before you became an atheist?
Thankfully, less than one.
And all the babies that you wanted to eat.
Right. I did some noms on my baby sister's cheeks.
That's about being angry, have you ever read Greta, what's her last name? Not Thurberg. No, not her. There's a different Greta, but she wrote an article called 50 Reasons Why Atheists Are Angry and Have Every Right to Be.
Right.
It's a very good article if you can find it. She's actually expanded it into a book, 99 Reasons, but I'll have to look up her name and give it to you in a minute here.
I'd also say this too. John, you made the point where you have a guy who's a Christian who's afraid to even say that he's questioning, because out of fear of losing his job, losing his social group, losing his wife, maybe losing his kids. Yeah. That is, there are some considerable hooks that come with believing this dogma to the point where, and I want to make this clear, because John, you agree with me on this definition. There's a point where you know that you don't believe in a God, yet you can't express it out of fear of losing these things that you're holding on to.
Yeah, you've got to go about pretending in the closet.
Right. I've had friends who are worth me, scientists at work who were Muslim, who were not Muslim, who are very much atheists. And when I had a conversation with them, it's like, I don't believe any of this either. Sometimes I just sit on my kitchen and just push my head against the floor just so I had this little bruise to show that I've been praying, so everybody else who looks at me can know that I'm a Muslim. Yeah. And I'm so glad to not be in those countries anymore. And I just can't imagine going back. And then they had to go back, and it broke my heart, because that was a job opportunity for their family. But they can't express that unless it's behind closed doors with other people who are like-minded. Right. Very sad.
A lot of atheists are that way. I mean, if you were raised in a Christian family, if you were raised in a Christian community and you're not a Christian anymore, it's not easy to come out. A lot of times people hide it. I hid my atheism for 30 years. I can identify. By the way, that Greta is Greta Christina.
Yep.
So check out her article. I posted a link here locally.
I'll put it in the comments.
Greta Christina and angry atheists, and you'll find her.
Why are you so angry? And every right to be. And it's also good to have some ownership of your anger, because that's the way how you can address it, grow past it, and move forward. Because there are a lot of bitter atheists for sure, and still are.
Indeed, it's the ex-Christians or the ex-Muslims.
There it is.
Who are the most militant. I'm not very militant, because I haven't got anything to be cross about, you know?
Right.
I was never inducted. I didn't have to deconstruct.
Besides the hijacking of your
country. I was born this way. What's your problem?
Interestingly, on that subject, we are undergoing a self consultation at the moment. We've got people who are questioning whether we should be we should have an established church. Even the Archbishop of Canterbury himself is questioning the establishment of Anglicanism. So it's all happening, and I want to tell you, perhaps when we come round to the end of the show, what's going on here.
Okay. Sounds good.
Sounds good.
So, hey, how about that? We are getting close to the end of the show. Let's do some roundups. You can find my stuff on Let's Chat. Guys, I enjoy talking to you every week. Dread Pirate, feel free to come in whenever you can. Hope you have a safe outing on your oil rigs. Where can we find your stuff at, my friend?
Well, you can find me on YouTube at Mind Pirate, MindPyrate. I live stream this when I'm available, when I'm on, at 7 a.m. Pacific Daylight time, I guess, is what it is now, on Sundays. And then when I'm able to join John Richards on the View of the News, I do that at 11 a.m. on Sunday mornings. I won't be there, John, sorry, this morning, but Once I get my own unit, I should be able to, have my own setup, because I'll be assigned a field medic truck, and so it'll be mine, sort of thing. So I can set it up in my own way, and should be available for more shows once I get settled in.
Great, excellent,
yeah. Cool. John Richards, where can we find your stuff at?
Free Thought Channel. That's where most of my stuff is available. But I want to tell you about the forthcoming Atheist Convention, which is on June the 4th. It's a Sunday, and it's in London, in the venue in London. And what we're going to do, we have some star celebrities who are speaking, including Lawrence Krauss. And what we're going to do is have an event followed by a dinner. And I will be auctioning the painting of Christopher Hitchens, and we might make a presentation, an honor to Richard Dawkins, and so on and so forth. It's cool. Going to be great.
Nice.
Yeah, awesome. Sounds fun.
Very cool.
Doubter 5.
My content can be found at digitalfreethought.com. Be sure to click on the blog button for our radio show archives, atheist songs, and other articles on the subject of atheism. You can find my book, Atheism, What's It All About, on Amazon. And my YouTube channel handle is @Doubter5. Remember, everybody is going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life. And we'll see you next Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. Awesome. Say bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye. Everybody. Bye. All right.